WTNS, Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's Place to Talk.
Hip, hip, hooray, let's give a cheer. It's 9 a.m., the signal's clear. Our favorite host is in the chair. The Truman Show is on the air.
It's the Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County.
The Truman Show is on the air. The Truman Show is on the air.
Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. Going to have an absolutely great and entertaining show today. And one of our heroes of Rutherford County is going to be the subject today. And the name of the book that we're going to be discussing is The Murder of Sam Davis. And that just kind of grabbed you to start with. And have Mr. Greg Tucker on. And he has brought a guest, Mr. James Solomon, who is from my area, Buchanan. Yeah.
James Solomon is a historian of note who is originally from Pulaski, Tennessee, which might account in part for his interest in Sam Davis, but he's from Buchanan, Virginia. And he sent me a copy of his book. I think he emailed me first and then sent me a copy of the book. And I get books occasionally like that, but this one really grabbed me. And I have always tried to advocate that we don't rely on what others have written. We go all the way back to the original records. Mm-hmm. And James has done that and found some records that I don't think anybody else had ever explored. Or if they had, they hadn't, you know, been brought to the public attention. So I'm delighted to be able to bring him in as a guest this morning.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate being here.
It's a really first-class book. I mean, my gosh, it's hardback. It's got some of the greatest pictures in there that I've seen. And it has one picture of Sam Davis that is just perfect. And I've always wondered, you know, I've never been able to see a good likeness of Sam Davis all this time. And it did. And it's my understanding that Hank Williams Jr. had purchased this picture.
He owns one of these pictures now. You know, when the statues were of Sam Davis were modeled on the Capitol grounds in Nashville and down in Pulaski, there was no photograph of Sam Davis, and or at least there was no known photograph of Sam Davis. The editor of the Confederate Veteran magazine, who was raising money, Mr. Cunningham, who was raising money for the statue in Nashville, made several appeals for a photograph of Sam Davis, and there was a thought that there was some idea that there was about three different photographs of Sam Davis in existence, but nobody found one until 1985. A guy named Mike Miner bought a photograph and an actual album, a family album that had belonged to John Morton's granddaughter. John Morton went to school with Sam Davis in Nashville before the Civil War, and John Morton, during the war, he was the artillery commander for Nathan Bedford Forrest.
Wow. Well, as I was thumbing through the book, I haven't had a chance to read it, but I'm going to, and I think all of the history buffs that are in listening distance of us would love to have this book. And it's called The Murder of Sam Davis, and you're, of course, James Solomon is the author. Now, tell me, there is so much intrigue that goes with Sam Davis, him being a young man.
Right.
His family was a family of means. And in that day and time, I think that loyalty meant a great deal. When you're either fighting for the North or the South, there was a lot of passion that was involved, because this is, I mean, our country was at stake.
Well, certainly.
The South and the North.
Right.
And kind of give us a little background about Sam Davis and what brought him to this point where he was to be executed.
Well, Sam Davis, of course, was, the war at that time, you know, the focus of the war in Tennessee was over Chattanooga.
Right.
General Bragg had laid siege to Chattanooga where after the Union Army had retreated into Chattanooga after the Battle of Chickamauga. Bragg hired Henry Shaw, who was a spy, who had worked actually for five different generals during the war. But in 1863, he was hired by Bragg, and certain soldiers, private soldiers, who were familiar with Middle Tennessee, were assigned under Bragg to come into Middle Tennessee. But mainly the thing that Sam Davis and the other privates were used for was to carry the dispatches that Henry Shaw generated from spying in Middle Tennessee, particularly about Union troop movements, particularly about reinforcements headed toward Chattanooga. And Sam Davis was, of course, captured while he was carrying one of these dispatches south from the Giles County area, and he was headed down to Somerville, Alabama, which is south of the Tennessee River down below Decatur.
Yeah.
And from there, it was going to be given to the dispatch and other mail that he was carrying was going to be given to a courier line, the regular operating rebel courier line down there for transfer on to Chattanooga. And when he was captured, Sam Davis was captured on November the 20th, 1863, was brought into Pulaski, was General Dodge, who the Union general in Pulaski at the time, who commanded the left wing of the 16th U.S. Army Corps, he questioned Sam Davis. Sam Davis wouldn't give him any information about who it was that had given him this, who'd given him the information. And he was accused of being a spy. General Dodge accused him of being a spy, convened a military commission to try him, and he was convicted on Wednesday, November the 25th, and hanged on Friday the 27th.
How much information did they have on Sam Davis that would how did they get the term that he was a spy at the time? How did they know?
Well, there were two real big pieces of information, big pieces of evidence against him. One was a pass that he was carrying. Mm-hmm. The pass was signed by, of course, Henry Shaw used an alias, which was E. Coleman. And the pass that Sam Davis was carrying was signed by E. Coleman, plus a dispatch that he was carrying was signed by E. Coleman. So, you know, it was the Union Union General Dodge figured that, well, if his Sam Davis must certainly know who E. Coleman is if he has a pass and he has a, and plus the dispatch, what Sam Davis did not know was that the dispatch he was carrying actually mentioned his name twice. But he had never read it, so which of course made it impossible for him to tell any kind of a story, to make up a story to suit his captors without telling the truth.
Now, when they commissioned spies during that particular time, what were they looking for? Because Sam Davis was obviously an articulate man. He was educated. And he was young. He was very young.
Yeah, 21.
Were they looking for someone who had the lay of the land or someone who had special talents during that particular time?
You mean to who they were assigning to serve under?
Yeah.
Well, I think that there were, one thing was, of course, a very good ability to ride a horse.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something else that I think Sam Davis, and was probably a pretty good qualifier to be a scout, was that you were able to live on your own. Sam Davis, his family, I've read in some of the family records where he was an excellent hunter, you know, so that he was able to feed himself, you know. And
I mean, you said a scout.
Right.
All right. Where do you qualify a person as a scout, and where do you qualify one as a
Sam spy? Davis mainly wore his own uniform, wore the Confederate uniform. Even though he was behind federal lines, he was still wearing, he was captured wearing his Confederate uniform.
That doesn't seem to fit the criteria.
Well, in part, that was defensive because if you're a prisoner of war, you're treated different from if you're a spy.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And there were 30 or 40 other Confederates who had been captured and were in Pulaski at the time, in jail in Pulaski at the time. You know, they singled Sam Davis out because of this particular dispatch that he was carrying.
There must have been something extremely important about this dispatch after they had captured him.
Oddly enough, it wasn't all that important.
Oh, wow.
The dispatch was mainly about how General Dodge was treating the population around Pulaski, mm-hmm. how he was procuring food for his troops, mm-hmm. and there was not, and in fact, parts of the dispatch were absolutely wrong, because one thing that the dispatch said, one thing that Henry Shaw had written in the dispatch was that it did not appear that the Union Army was going to repair the railroad down mm-hmm. through that part of the country at the time. But in fact, that was the reason that Dodge was in Pulaski, was to repair the railroad.
Wow. Sounds like bad publicity for them.
I think that part of the biggest motivator, perhaps, for General Dodge was that he wanted to make an example out of somebody, you know, and Sam Davis was the man they decided to make an example out of.
In particular, tell us what you learned about the sentence itself.
Well, the interestingly, I discovered in the archives in Iowa that, which is where the general's papers are, where Grenville Dodge collection is. I found the original transcript of the military commission, mm-hmm. and on the one of the last pages of the military commission, on that transcript, is like a 15-page transcript, and on the next to the last page, where the sentence was pronounced, the clerk at the military commission had written as clear as day to be shot unto death, that the mm-hmm. sentence was to be that he was to be shot unto death. Mm-hmm. But the same day that the sentence was handed down, which was Wednesday, November the 25th, someone came into the to Dodge's headquarters and marked through shot unto death and wrote above it, hung by the neck until he is dead.
Mm.
And it's interesting that Grenville Dodge was not in Pulaski that day, that it was that totally somebody else came in and changed the sentence.
What could possibly, and I'm asking you to speculate, obviously, but what could possibly have been the motive or the reason for the change?
The reason for the change, I believe, was to be hung was a much more ignominious death than to be shot. It was generally believed at the time that actually, to be shot in front of a firing squad was not that bad of a way to die.
There's a little bit of a respect with
right.
That.
It was in fact mentioned as a soldier's way to die.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Whereas a hanging was
we hang criminals.
The Bible says that a man hanged is accursed by God.
Yeah, it's amazing how that ended up. And Sam Davis, you know, as it has been portrayed and how we look at it now, that is one of the reasons that Sam Davis has become a hero just larger than life, because he did not give in to any of the punishments that they were going to give him. Mm-hmm. And I always, you know, when he said he's going to lay down his life,
And interestingly, the more you get into the research of exactly how the whole thing went down, the bravery and his courage, you know, was actually greater than you think it is. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it builds kind of more so than it wasn't just a matter of dying rather than betraying a friend. There was actually an effort made to make Sam Davis believe that he had been betrayed himself.
Mm-hmm. Was it unusual for people to stand up with their responsibilities and their loyalties to actually pay that price back during that particular time? Or was this a kind of an isolated incident where this normally did not occur?
Well, of course, you know, the Civil War was a brutal time.
Yeah.
And people just laid, men from North and South both just laid their lives down on a moment's notice, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was loyalties and all were very important to the people.
Well, you think about someone like Sam Davis, who gave the ultimate price, and then what makes him stand out so much more than, say, someone like Job? Who was just absolutely mutilated. I mean, you can't even imagine the terror that went through him.
Well, one interesting thing about it is that the people who recognized Sam Davis's heroism were the Union soldiers who witnessed the execution.
So terrible, and they had that much respect.
Yeah,
they had all
the respect in the world for what he
did.
When in fact, you know, before, I mean, if you were a soldier and a spy for the other side was getting ready to be executed in front of you, mm-hmm. you would most likely have very little respect for the guy because, you know, there's not many more dastardly crimes mm-hmm. against one side or the other in a war than to be a spy. And but ultimately, they had nothing but praise for him.
So to try to make an example out of Sam Davis actually backfired on them, didn't it?
It did backfire. In the long term, it did backfire on him, yeah.
It was, though, several decades before the real story and the legend began to evolve.
Right. Well, of course, after the war, well, everybody wanted to
move on.
But then by the 1890s, well, the men who had fought as young men during the war were at middle age and beyond middle age and, you know, were the people who were in power by that time mm-hmm. in the state and in nation and elsewhere. And it was the veterans of the war that initially came up with the money to build the statue in Nashville and the statue in Pulaski. Yeah.
You mentioned Shaw, who was known as Coleman, I think.
Right.
What did you learn about him? Particularly interesting figure.
Well, he was a... I went up to the National Archives and through the help of a guy named Dr. Michael Music, who was the... At the time, he's retired now, but he was the foremost authority. He was introduced to me as the foremost authority on Civil War records at the National Archives. And he located for me Henry Shaw's service record, and he also located a prisoner of war list that had Henry Shaw's name on it. Mm-hmm. And the prisoner of war list, interesting thing about it was not only did it have the date, which was November the 22nd, that Henry Shaw was captured, it also had by whom he was captured. Mm. And the person that he was captured by was Captain Horn. It just said Captain Horn. And when I went through the regimental rosters of the people the regiments that were in the left wing of the 16th U.S. Army Corps that were in Pulaski at the time, I found that Captain Henry Horn, was the captain of Company B of the 50th Illinois Infantry. Mm-hmm. And they were designated, that company was designated as Brigade Scouts for the brigade that was at the time up at Linville. And what they did is just went out for days at the time, scouring across the countryside, mainly for the purpose of trying to round up horses, take horses from farmers, you know, mm-hmm. that the Union Army could use. And when they captured Henry Shaw on November the 22nd, on Sunday, they actually did not return to Linville into camp until Wednesday the 25th mm-hmm. after that. So from from Sunday the 22nd to Wednesday the 25th, Company B the brigade scouts, after they had captured Henry Shaw, they knew nothing about what was going on down at Pulaski with Sam Davis. Mm-hmm. And so they just took Henry Shaw along with them, finally took him back into camp. And so he would not, it's my belief that he wasn't transferred to Pulaski until Thursday, the 24th, to the 26th, just the day before Sam Davis was hanged. So Sam, I don't believe that Sam Davis and Henry Shaw were ever actually in jail together where they had an opportunity to communicate.
Mm-hmm. And there's been speculation by others that they actually had contact and were there together.
Right.
But what you're found in the records just chronologically suggested that couldn't have happened.
Right, right.
Now,
what did you learn about Shaw from, you said you got into the General Dodge's documents.
Right. Well, it's very unexpectedly. Along in the 1890s, when the money was being raised for the statues in Nashville and Pulaski, and Sam Davis was in the news a lot, mm-hmm. Grenville Dodge was a very wealthy fella in New York City. And he had been associated with the Union Pacific Railroad for many years before that. And Grenville Dodge wrote a letter to the Confederate Veteran magazine long in about 1897, in which he said that he had absolutely, back in 1863, he had absolutely no information whatsoever about Henry Shaw's importance. Mm-hmm. While Henry Shaw was in jail in Pulaski, that he had absolutely no, he didn't know that he was a spy, he didn't know that he was even a scout. Yet, well, so then I go up to the archives in Iowa, and as I'm looking through Grenville Dodge's papers from November of 1863, well, first I went back and I started looking through his papers earlier in the summer, mm-hmm. and the papers were all these original handwritten letters that were in this file were arranged in this folder by the chronological date at the top of the heading on the mm-hmm. on the letter, you know. And as I'm turning through there, I'm going through July, and I get to the 26th of July, and I turn a sheet over, and there in front of me is Henry Shaw's authorization paper. The actual paper that the Confederate authorities that he had gotten from General Bragg's headquarters, mm-hmm. authorizing him to go into Middle Tennessee with this company of scouts that he had, and to do this, to relay information back to Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
at some point Dodge had come into possession of the actual
order. Dodge had the actual
Shaw,
yeah.
And these were the orders to set up what became the Coleman Scouts.
Right.
And to operate.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I found in Henry Shaw's service record at the National Archives, I found a letter that Henry Shaw had written after he had gotten out from prison, after Sam Davis was executed. Well, Henry Shaw and the other prisoners who were in Pulaski were transferred north to prisons. Mm-hmm. Henry Shaw, in particular, was sent to Johnson's Island Prison in Lake Erie off of, it's an island in Lake Erie off of Sandusky, Ohio. And after Henry Shaw had been in prison for about 16 months, in early 1865, in March of 1865, he had written a letter to Confederate authorities in Richmond trying to be reimbursed for horses he had lost and other expenses he had incurred. Mm. And as he is explaining, as he's going through all of the different aspects of his service to the Confederacy, down near the bottom of the page, he's trying to explain why he had not had any, why he didn't have any valid papers to show the Confederate authorities to prove his service.
Mm-hmm. And, in other words, he didn't have his copy of his orders.
He didn't have a copy of his orders, and he made the statement in this letter, "My orders were given up to secure protection." Mm. And
all the things that are happening, it seems like that the treatment of captured enemies was left almost strictly. I know there was a code of how you were supposed to deal with them, but some of the officers seemed to go above and beyond the treatment of prisoners and what the final result would be.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, there was a, I went up to the United States Army Military History Institute, which is at Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. It's on the same Army base as the War College. Mm-hmm. And I was looking through their library, and I found an actual copy of the 1863 revised United States Army regulations.
Mm-hmm. Which predate the execution of Sam Davis.
Right, which predates the execution.
They would be in force at that time.
Right. They were in force. It would have been a book that would have been in Dodge's headquarters, you know. And as you read through that book, you notice that a law had been passed by Congress took effect on March the 3rd, 1863. And that law required that before a military execution could take place, it had to be approved by the general in command of the Army, mm-hmm. And I have a interpretation of that law from the fellow who was the judge advocate general, a guy named Joseph Holt, who said that what that meant was that it was like the people who qualified to command an army or a department was a major general, and of course at the time. Grenville Dodge was a brigadier general.
Mm-hmm. All right,
With Sherman, he was actually the left wing of the 16th U.S. Army Corps was part of the Army of the Tennessee, which at that time was commanded by William T. Sherman. Hmm. But he never asked Sherman anything about, you know.
All right, so your title then takes on a particular significance: the murder of Sam Davis, mm-hmm. at least under the technical rules at the time. His execution was not properly authorized.
Well, if you think about it, comparing it to a civilian situation, if a person were convicted of some capital crime up in circuit court, and that night, and he was sentenced to be executed, mm-hmm. and that night, if he was taken down to the jail, and another inmate came in and killed him, mm-hmm. well, that would be murder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If it was the sheriff, it would be murder. Mm-hmm. You know, if it had been the judge that sentenced him, it would have been murder. Right. You know, if you don't go through the steps of having the governor sign the death certificate and all of that, mm-hmm. well, you know, if you don't follow the steps, well, you know, illegally killing someone is basically what murder is.
Was this different than how almost all other prisoners were treated at that time? Was it common for soldiers to execute people without going through the proper?
Well, there were certainly instances of it. There's a a book that I've read. It's like Executions Under Lincoln or mm-hmm. or whatever. But it lists all of the, I think it's like about 200 or 300 executions that actually took place in the Union Army. Of course, most of them were people who were executed were Union soldiers, yeah. you know. But, you know, in a time of war, justice and... you know, actually what happens is not always, of course, to the letter of the law. But even so, if it happened to your loved one, mm-hmm. it would...
that in Rutherford County during that period of occupation, well, first we had the Confederate Army based here under Bragg.
Right.
And he executed a number, but it was almost always Confederate deserters. Mm-hmm. And again, trying to keep discipline in your corps, you got to make clear that desertion is not acceptable. Oh, while the Union Army was here, they must have executed a dozen. And again, the same thing. The Union Army also, though, had the police powers. And they did several civilian executions for such things as murder and other crimes during that period. And I think we learned that during the period of occupation by the two armies together were more executions than throughout the history of the county. So you can see how
much,
how much activity there was. But I believe every single one of them was either a civilian crime or a desertion. So, you know, they were executing their own personnel
rather than
enemy personnel. Let me take you back to Shaw. You know, from what is in your book and what you've just described, it causes me to rethink the reputation of Shaw, because by his own admission in the letter you found, he says he cooperated. And the fact that his orders were in the possession of the enemy general suggests that to save his own life, probably, as he suggests there, he cooperated and spent the rest of the war, certainly not in comfort, but out of a combat role, out of harm in that sense, as a prisoner of war, survived it.
And,
I say that in contrast to what Job Davis gave.
Job
gave up, and what Sam Davis gave up. Mm-hmm.
But the men who served under Shaw, I think it's worth noting, the men who served under Shaw, not one of them ever said anything disparaging toward him whatsoever. You know, they had total confidence in him, you know, exactly what the ramifications of the statement are. I gave up my orders were given up to secure protection. Mm-hmm. Exactly what he meant by that, you know, is subject to interpretation, I suppose.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with the murder of Sam Davis.
How many avenues have you taken but still keep coming back to the road asking yourself, how do I find my purpose in life? Have you ever set goals for yourself and lacked that extra oomph to see them through? If not, it's time to start. If so, what has kept you from achieving them? I'm Jean Jenkins, and I'm a certified Christian life coach. I can help you find your passion and purpose, help you attain them, and hold you accountable. Maybe you lack the self-esteem to do any of the above. I have the desire to help you see your worth, passions, and goals in life. Through life coaching, you can build a greater self-esteem so you can approach life with a determination to pursue your goals with inspiration and a burning desire to achieve them. You'll expand your possibilities through accountability. In the end, you'll be inspired, motivated, and willing to step out of that box that's constrained you so you can reach your goals with a greater love for yourself. For more info, go to findingyou.com. That's findingewe.com. You can't take care of other things until you take care of yourself. Start off the year by investing in you.
GPS Refurbishing, Middle Tennessee's metal refurbishing and coating experts since 1985. GPS Refurbishing can bring new life to your old, worn out, even damaged metal treasures using our proven metal refurbishing processes, including powder coating. This process bakes on vivid, durable colors and is much better than wet spray paints. Bring antiques, outdoor and pool furniture, wheels, tools, farm equipment, toys, metal shelving, trailers, aluminum boats, and more back to life. GPS Refurbishing, 895-0816. GPS Refurbishing, 810 Old Salem Highway, just off Middle Tennessee Boulevard.
Northside Healthcare provides two levels of care. Intermediate care for patients who need around-the-clock care, and skilled care for patients requiring therapy services.
People are not staying in the hospital as long as they used to. That's where we come in. If you're not quite ready to go home, you can come here. We're able to give you that attention that you need, specifically designed by the doctor.
I do get good care here.
Northside Healthcare on East MTCS Drive beside Middle Tennessee Christian School.
School rezoning. I'm Ron Jordan with local news from WGNS. Rutherford County Board of Education will next discuss the middle school rezoning proposal at a public meeting February 26th, beginning at 5:30 p.m. at the Rutherford County School Central Office. The school board hosted a public hearing on the proposal February 11th at the Whitworth Buchanan Middle School in an effort to gather valuable input from parents who are potentially affected. School boards adopted a draft proposal for the rezoning, but only for discussion purposes and to collect feedback from parents. Parent feedback is an important part of the rezoning process and will be considered before a final decision is made. A map of the draft proposal is available on our website, wgnsradio.com, keyword rezoning.
Shelbyville's mayor and city council have written to several members of Congress expressing concerns about a proposed federal law that would impact the Tennessee walking horse industry. According to Shelbyville Times-Gazette, in a letter to Representative Scott Desjarlais and others, the council says it believes the Prevent All Soaring Tactics Act is more encompassing than needed in the extent of new federal regulations through the Department of Agriculture. The bill has 263 co-sponsors in the House, but support from only one Tennessee member, Representative Steve Cohen of Memphis. Tennessee State Troopers apprehended two armed robbery suspects Saturday night at the Petro truck stop in Cheatham County. Shortly before the arrest, at about 5 p.m., witnesses at a Shell station in Humphreys County, off I-40, exit 143 in Hurricane Mills, reported a white man and white woman armed with a handgun and knife robbed the business, traveling eastbound on I-40 on their getaway. Witnesses described the getaway vehicle, that description handed over to the DHP. I'm Ron Jordan. You're up to date, and this is WGNS News.
Brought to you by
Kestner Chiropractic and Acupuncture Center on Broad, across from the Chevy dealer.
For 25 years, I've enjoyed helping thousands of your friends and neighbors find relief from pain. For a free consultation, give me a call at 895-1253.
Brought to you by Safe Auto. When shopping for car insurance, don't end up buying more insurance than you need. Talk to Safe Auto. Always the right car insurance for the right price right now. 1-800-SAFE-AUTO.
WeatherEye.
We'll see a few scattered showers and thunderstorms here for this afternoon with cloudy skies, a high around 60 degrees, and winds out of the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour, winds gusting as high as 25. I'm WGNS meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Right now, 43.
Premier Six Theater on Broad and Jackson Heights, showing all of your favorite movies. Call their hotline, 896-4100, or go seeamovie.com. Popcorn pop fresh daily. Their movie hotline, 896-4100, or go seeamovie.com. Premier Six on Broad and Jackson Heights.
The Truman Show on FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. We're Rutherford County's place to talk.
And welcome back with Greg Tucker and James Solomon. And this part of their show is brought to you by Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat. And you know now that there is a way to restore your hearing. You need to give Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat a call today. And Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat has been Rutherford County's trusted provider of taking care of all the coughing, sneezing, stuffed-up feelings for almost two decades. And I'm sure they've been busy this winter. Their team of caring physicians, audiologists, nurses, and administrators are standing ready for you and your family so you can improve your style of healthy living. They also have a mobile hearing unit that will actually come to your home, diagnose, fit you with a hearing device right in the comfort of your living room. Call Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat today at 848-9265. That's 848-9265. You know, I was talking to you after we went off. Tell me how long it took you to write this book. It's got to be a labor of love, and I'm saying labor because you've been everywhere. You've done more research, almost as much as Greg Tucker has all this
time.
Well,
I don't know about that. But
he was much better focused on a topic.
I grew up in Pulaski, and I kind of developed an interest over time that, you know, the story of Sam Davis, there were so many mysteries surrounding, you know, and there were questions like, well, why didn't he make up a story when he was being questioned? Why didn't he say, oh, yeah, you know, so-and-so gave me that, and now he's in Missouri or somewhere. You know, he could have said anything. He could have tried to have said anything to satisfy the his questioners. Mm-hmm. And he tried to make a statement at the – actually, he did try to make a statement at the military commission, but he didn't know what to say. And the reason he didn't know what to say is because he didn't know that his name was on the thing twice. Mm-hmm.
Did he actually know what the contents had in what?
No,
he
didn't. He had never read it. He had never read it. In fact, the first time that it occurred to me that he had never read the dispatch was a guy named James Young, who was who was the chaplain at his execution and had visited him the night before the execution in jail. he wrote a letter to the Confederate Veteran magazine along about 1897, in which he said that Sam Davis had never read the dispatch that he was carrying, mm-hmm. so he didn't know what it said, you know. And but then there's a interesting story, if you read the book, about the ramifications of that, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, was it, what were they really trying to get from him? Was it just his comrades, the guys he ran with that were in his group? Do we know, were they after any particular information at all?
Well, there is some evidence that Sam Davis was carrying some other information, mm-hmm. particularly that that the Union Army, the way the Union Army kept up with itself was mm-hmm. by filing returns. Mm-hmm. There was what was called returns, which were the a list of how many men were in each company, mm-hmm. how many arms they had, you know, and how many were ready for duty, and how many were sick, and mm-hmm. all of this. And there is a story that that a person in a fellow who had a black guy who had been working for in my telephone's ringing here in my pocket. I'm
you want me to open the window for you?
But I forget where I was at right now, but go ahead.
Well, I'm trying to find out, you know, what information they were trying to get from Sam Davis.
Right.
Because what I'm trying to lead to the execution of Sam Davis.
Right.
Why did it occur, and what was the reasoning behind it?
It seems to me that, well, Grenville Dodge was a very complicated man himself. Mm-hmm. And whether or not he... you know, there's certainly the chance that he was just trying to make an example out of mm-hmm. somebody, because he was in he was occupying a part of Middle Tennessee that was very strongly Confederate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the population was, Giles County voted something like 2,400 and some odd votes to 11 to secede.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And plus Giles County being the last county before you go into Alabama, and Confederate forces being over in Alabama, there was a lot of situations where farmers in Giles County were helping feed the Confederate Army,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it seems to me that that a good part of his motivation may very well have been to make an example out of somebody.
Well, many of the execution of deserters were obviously to make an example. The executions of mm-hmm. civilians was, you know, don't cooperate with the enemy. Here's where you go.
But right. It seemed like Sam Davis, if you had a title for him, a military title, it would be scout rather than someone who would be a spy, even though he would have
right.
information. But from what you're saying, the information is really not helpful at all.
Well, Grenville Dodge, when he wrote to the Confederate Veteran magazine in 1897, he tried to say, among other things, that Sam Davis was not wearing a Confederate uniform when he was captured.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, the testimony, the people who captured him said that he was wearing a Confederate uniform. Mm-hmm. You know, the testimony at the military commission was that he was wearing a Confederate uniform.
Well, did Dodge feel like that he was in trouble? Did he ever feel like that he may have to pay for what he did?
I don't.
Because what you're saying, I mean, that's, it's almost,
well, he may have,
a cover,
you know,
to start with.
I think he no doubt felt some pressure, you know. But exactly whether or not there was any opportunity or any chance that he was going to be prosecuted, or, you know, he could certainly have had it worried about having his reputation tarnished.
Yeah, you would think that what he did with Davis would be one of those things would bring a lot of resentment, not only from the south side, but also the north, because
his correspondence sounds like he's trying to distance himself from the ultimate fate of Sam Davis, which in the 1890s was becoming a cause, mm-hmm. you know, a groundswell of admiration for the boy hero.
But just as an example of Grenville Dodge's statue in the 1890s, he was when Grant's tomb was dedicated in New York City mm-hmm. in 1897, in April of 1897, the President McKinley was there, the Vice President was there, senators, congressmen were all on the reviewing stand. You know, mm-hmm. it was a very popular place to be that yeah. day. There were 30,000 people in the parade. Mm-hmm. And the man who was the Grand Marshal of that parade was Grenville Dodge.
Wow. That's amazing.
And he was a man of considerable wealth by
then. He was a man of considerable wealth.
Union and, Pacific had extended by then all the way across the United States.
The mm-hmm. fact is that the most popular photograph of the driving of the
Golden Spike
at Promontory Point, Utah, Grenville Dodge is shaking hands with a guy from the Central Pacific Railroad.
Amazing. So,
yeah, I think he was either protecting or polishing his reputation.
Right, he was very concerned about
that,
his...
Yeah. Didn't want that stain.
And he lived until like 1915 or so. He was in his 80s when he died.
Lived a lot longer than Sam Davis did, didn't he?
Yeah.
We want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Metal Max Roofing and Siding, located at 900 Captain Joe Fulgham Drive, another one of our local heroes, and that's just off Middle Tennessee Boulevard right here in Murfreesboro. Metal roofs are not only beautiful, they're resistant to wind damage, roof rust, and less expensive than asphalt shingles many times. They offer factory direct pricing so you can buy your roofing and siding materials straight from the manufacturer without the middleman. Go by and see their friendly staff today. Let them show you over 20 different colors of Metal Max roofing and siding. Give them a call today at 494-1693, 494-1693. Pull them up on the website. It's www.metalmax.com. And we're going to take a quick break.
You can get non-medical care at home for you and your loved one. Just visit athomecaretn.com.
My name is Cheryl Bradley, and I've been with At Home Care for 4 years. I'm the Director of Care Coordination. And one of the things that we do here at Home Care is we take the time to get to know our clients and match them with one of our home care aides. And we have 120-plus home care aides, so we try to make sure the personalities and the type of services are matched properly.
Here's Melissa Warren with At Home Care.
The one thing that I think really sets At Home Care apart is that we understand we may not be the answer for everyone that phones us, but our goal is to help everyone that phones us, give them direction, give them information, maybe lead them to where they do need to call to get the help they need.
That's athomecaretn.com.
The Outpost Armory is not just another gun store. Our staff has hands-on knowledge and experience with firearms, self-defense training, hunting, and competitive shooting. We cater to the new gun owner and the expert looking for that hard-to-find product. We carry items that the big chain stores don't and have bulk ammunition for the high-volume shooter. We defend the Second Amendment and help responsible citizens protect their families, rights, and liberties. Visit us in person or online at theoutpostarmory.com. The Outpost Armory, I-24 East at Exit 89 in Murfreesboro.
Where is the best barbecue in town? At 1920 East Main. The best barbecue for miles around is at 1920 East Main. You can buy it by the pound, sandwich, platter, or plate. No matter what you choose, it will taste great. You can come with a friend, by yourself, or with a date to Slick Pig Barbecue. Barbecue pork, beef, or chicken, Brunswick stew, down home atmosphere, and they cater. Slick Pig Barbecue. It's the best.
A new game has risen to the top of the instant game world, relentlessly producing winner after winner, over and over again, coughing up cash prizes and paying out time after time. Be on the lookout for the new Frenzy family of games from the Tennessee Lottery. With so many $500, $100, and $50 prizes, you're going to need a bigger wallet. The Tennessee Lottery. game-changing fun.
You know what would be really nice? About $1 million.
Get an instant game.
What are you talking about?
Instant game from the Tennessee Lottery, like Tennessee Millions.
Actually, that's a good idea.
Of course it is. You could be an instant millionaire.
Instant millionaire?
On the spot.
Instant millionaire. Ooh, I like the sound of that.
Hey, even if you only won 1,000, instant thousandaire.
Oh, I like the instant millionaire thing better.
We're celebrating our 10th year with a $1 million game. Play Tennessee Millions and be the next instant millionaire. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
The Truman Show on FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. We're Rutherford County's place to talk.
And welcome back with James Solomon and Greg Tucker. And this is really a fascinating book. And I guarantee you, everybody out there that wants to know about the true history of what's happened in this community and about heroism and then the opposite, you need to pick up this book. And it's called The Murder of Sam Davis. And I know we've touched on a lot, James, and we've got probably 5 or 6 minutes left. Is there anything that really has been one of your key components as far as what you were searching for with Sam Davis and the total story? Because you've got at the end of the book quite a bit of information about what's happened to all the key figures,
right,
that are noted in your book.
Right. Well, just as one little point that I kind of was really interesting to me was that while I was in Iowa looking through Dodge's files, I found my great-great-grandfather's name on a piece of paper.
Wow.
And as it turned out, the piece of paper was a furlough that his first cousin, my great-great-grandfather was the captain of Company H of the 32nd Tennessee Infantry.
Hmm.
And there was a fellow who, it wasn't his first cousin, but it was another great-great-grandfather I had. First cousin, a guy named William G. Hanna, who was captured in Pulaski, who had the furlough, had come back to Giles County to visit his family because his wife had died, and he was trying to make some arrangements for his two children. And this guy, William G. Hanna, who was the first cousin of my great-great-grandfather, was actually in jail with Sam Davis and was had to have been looking through from the courthouse window with Henry Shaw and the others when Sam Davis was brought from the jail across the street.
How much of your information, or were you able to get any information from people that were there at the time and could actually see what was going on, or
right,
actually feel what was going
well,
on?
Well, you know, the first people to really recognize Sam Davis's heroism were the Union soldiers who witnessed the execution.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found at least 25 different accounts written by Union soldiers, and every one of them is praising Sam Davis.
These are letters they wrote home.
The letters they wrote home, diaries they kept, later articles that they wrote for various newspapers and magazines. And
I wonder how that was accepted, say, from in the northern areas where you have soldiers that were representing them actually explaining in great detail the heroism of what they would consider the enemy.
You get the impression that by 30 or 40 years after the war was over, everybody was really ready to forget about it.
Yeah.
And you know, and look back on it in good terms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wanted to look back on it as kind of what they went through as young men, and that I think is part of what attracted so many of them to the Sam Davis story, was that he was that his heroism was so public that. And yet there were so many, you know, it was sort of indicative of the Confederate soldier, you know, they like to think, and the Union soldiers too, of course.
At what point did Sam Davis reach the level of being considered a hero for what he did? Usually these things take time.
Right. Well, the subtitle of the book is, The Murder of Sam Davis, and the subtitle is The Most Celebrated Enlisted Man Killed During the Civil War. Right. You take of the 600,000 soldiers from both sides, enlisted men who were killed during the Civil War, Sam Davis, after the war posthumously, was the most celebrated of them all.
But this story really was 3 decades
right,
after the end of the war before it really became a cause and a celebration. Partly because Kennedy, who brought the body home, wrote about it and spoke about it. And hard to say, except, as you said earlier, at that time you had the aging population that had been part of the war.
Right.
And they began to, as we've seen with our own generation, to look back and to be anxious that it would be preserved and that it would be remembered and celebrated.
Right.
And I think probably initially, and again, speculating, but knowing from even what we see today, Sam Davis was a symbol of the Confederate infantryman, the soldier.
He was.
The guy in the trenches, we'd say today.
Yeah.
And, it has evolved from there.
It was almost, you would thought, remember how the Remember the Alamo. And you would think that it would probably, I mean, what a foolish thing to do to murder somebody like that, because you know it's going to bring an outrage from almost every place that you can think of.
Well, if it had been broadly known in the years contemporary with the events, it probably would have been a battle cry, a rallying cry.
Mm-hmm.
But it really wasn't. I mean, the story of Sam Davis, the average Confederate soldier at the time of the end of the war, I'm sure
didn't
know.
Well, of course not. They didn't know it, but 30 years later, the story really took off.
Mm-hmm. And it's taken you how long to write the book?
I have I didn't work on it every day during that period of time, but I worked on it over and off and on over a period of about 20 years.
And I'm sure a lot of, just like what Greg does, he's looking for authentic records make sure that the story has been put out accurately.
And
again, we can imagine that when the story was evolving in the 90s, people weren't interested in going back to actual records. The stories, the legends, the example of the extreme loyalty to the Confederacy, the lost cause, that's what was motivating people. And, it takes another 100 years before somebody really takes the time to go back and dig it out.
Oh, it's an amazing, it's a beautiful book. And the title, of course, is The Murder of Sam Davis by James Solomon. And it's a book that once you start reading, you can't put it down. And tell us how everybody out there can get a copy of this book, James.
Okay. I'm going to be at the Rutherford County Historical Society meeting tonight, and I'll sign the books. I'll sell you a book and
Welcome to come by, right, Greg?
Right. 7 o'clock this evening at the Rutherford County Archives,
which is located
on Rice Street. Yes, if you know the old shopping center there on Memorial, just off of Broad, it's behind what was the county superintendent's building for many years.
Oh, okay.
Let me just say this. I my effort was to not only find all of the information, but then to put that information down in a story form, in a narrative form, which is what I tried to accomplish there.
Oh, I can't wait to start reading it.
Well, good.
I'm going to love it. Now, if they want to order this book,
right?
How do they go about it?
Well, you
that?
Can order it from my website, which is sagesity.com, which is SAGEESITY. And I think we're going to have a link on the radio station here's website where you can just click right on it and go straight to the order form.
Now, how did we luck up in having you in Rutherford County today?
You're not asking about his drive from Pulaski.
Well, I hopped out of bed early this morning, and I'm visiting my brother-in-law down in Pulaski, and I'm a seventh generation Giles Countyan, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
You know, my family on my mother's side has been in Giles County since 1813.
Wow.
Actually, we put him on tour. He emailed me last week, said he's going to be in the area. So you, with the Southern Sons of the Confederate Veterans up in Nashville
right.
on Thursday, the AARP here on Friday, and with the sheriff this morning and tonight over at the Historic Society.
Yeah, and I really appreciate Greg setting all of this up for me.
I appreciate it, too, because it's an absolutely fascinating story. Thank you, Greg. Thank you for bringing James over.
All right. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to a week from tomorrow. I get to come back with you.
Oh, I'm just blessed. You guys have a good time tonight, and I know everybody will be coming over there. Well, unfortunately, I can't make it tonight because...
What are you doing tonight?
We've got the old-timers baseball going on at the J.C.'s building. And, of course, those that don't go over to the historical meeting tonight, they can come by and talk baseball and have some good food from Kirk and Bert's.
We're going to have to get organized so we don't go on the same date.
I know. We'll see you guys in the morning at 9 o'clock.
Thank you a lot.